This is the examination of the hidden human condition.
You're listening to the Hidden Killers Podcast.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi.
That indeed it is. If you want to weigh in on the cases that we are talking about, we have a phone number for that. It's 888-5-KILLER, 888-554-5537 to share your opinion, your thoughts, your theories on the cases that we are following for you. Tony and Stacey Cole here with you to do just that today. And let's go to a phone call. Hi.
Hi, my name is Corey and I'm in Oklahoma. I just have a really quick thought that I haven't about the Alex Murdaugh trial. I haven't heard anyone speculate on this theory, but there was a lot of speculation around the height of the killer and the defense trying to make them be 5'2 or a short person. There was never, from the prosecutor's side, a theory about the shooter being on the golf cart. And I had been wondering if they were going to bring it up. And then once Alec got on the stand, there was a time where he rambled about a bunch of stuff. But during one specific time, he's rambling about where the golf cart was parked and how it wasn't parked where it normally was. And that could have just been him trying to just make up another story in his web of lies. But I thought that was really interesting. And I don't know, maybe someone has already brought up that theory, but there was also apparently tire track marks on Maggie's legs. So I don't know, just something that I wanted to see or kind of get your thoughts on. And that's basically it. I was just going to keep it short and sweet. I love your podcast. Thank you so much. Bye.
Thanks for your thoughts there. There was a tire marks near Maggie or on Maggie's, on her leg. They never really expounded upon that very much other than stating that. As far as a shooter being on the golf cart, I don't know that there was much evidence to that because it was in a very tight location in that building, that room in the dog kennel. So I don't know that that really would have made much logical sense for a drive-by golf cart shooting. My theory, which I think they should have really gone with, was garden gnomes, that the garden gnomes came to life, grabbed the local weapons because they knew where they were because they've been sitting there as concrete statues forever watching these people. And the garden gnome just said, you know what? I'm done. I'm taking these people out. But they never did bring up the garden gnomes. That would have been interesting though, to hear Alec Murdaugh try and argue that. Like, I swear to God.
Well, he would have too, wouldn't he?
I know I've lied about a lot of stuff. I lied about, Papa and Mama and Bumblefuck. But you know what? This is true. I was sitting there. I came down to the kennel. I took a little nap. I had a dream about kittens, about kittens all cuddling up together and loving each other. And then I pet a kitten too. And I love kittens. I love kittens. I love kittens so much. But I went down there. The garden gnomes, they all had guns, and they had taken that shotgun rifle stuff. And they packed it in. They just started shooting. I said, oh, my God. That's why the shots were so low. It was the garden gnomes. I'm not lying about that, but I lie about everything else. I could see that being
a
possible defense for Alec Murdaugh. I don't know. There's so many things with this case. If he was not the shooter, he damn well knew who the shooter was, in my opinion. The only other thing I can possibly fathom with this is that there was someone who put a threat to him directly saying, I will kill the rest of your family, your brothers, your sister, your nieces, your nephews, everybody, if you tell or if you say who did this. But as a warning shot, I'm killing these two. And he was there with Alec, did it, and got out of there. And Alec has had to stay quiet for fear that there'd be a further hit on the rest of his family. Could be why that was never brought up as a defense. They kind of tiptoed into the idea that there were other killers, but never really gave any idea who or why they would be there. Other than there was a lot of people who were mad at him for the boating accident. They talked about the money, but never really connected someone who wanted to kill him over the money. I don't know. There, I think in theory could be other places that this could have gone, but they didn't seem to touch it at all on the defense of Alec Murdaugh. So I don't know if that's out of fear or if there's nothing there.
I still feel like something money related could play into this, because he stole so much money from so many people.
Okay,
and I can't believe that they would just sit by and go, eh, okay.
Now, I mean, with that many people that personally affected by him and his decisions, it would be very surprising if there had not been something or someone that would be going after him. But there's a lot of people legally going after him this way and that way. So I don't know. It's interesting. Going to be talking with Mark Tinsley, who's the attorney for the family in the boat crash that occurred at Mallory Beach. Also going after Palmetto State Bank for the involvement of their former CEO being involved with Alec Murdaugh's finances. And one of the clients there, Arthur, who is owed quite a bit of money from Alec Murdaugh. And that case is ongoing, but we'll have that here for you on the feed on the channel. So be watching for that one very soon, if it's not already aired, which it may have by the time this drops. But it's an ongoing thing. And like I said, we're far from being close, I think, to the end of anything with the case of Alec Murdaugh, in my opinion.
Do you think those people will ever get their money back?
Not if he doesn't have it. I mean, they're going to try. They're already breaking down the estates in certain ways. There are certain ways that it can't be broken up because some of it's in trusts. I've heard it explained to me several different ways. Including from the family, the attorney of Stephen Smith the other day, Alec does have like more than $1 million that is in a trust that cannot be touched by anything at this moment in time. But we'll see. We'll see. I mean, at some point it's going to run out. I think he owes far more than he has the ability to pay back.
Yeah.
Or when you break down anything. And he was strategic about it too. A lot of these things were actually in his wife's name. So you can't really go after a lot of that because she was a victim here as well. So I don't know. It's interesting the way all that breaks down, but there's still more trials coming up. There's the trial for the boat crash coming up here in August. And I believe another Palmetto one is coming up in August as well. Let's go over to a quick call about Koberger. Yeah.
Hey there, Tony. My name is Kathleen. I am calling from North Idaho. And my thought on the Brian Koberger trial is that I know people have weighed in on doing the insanity plea, but as far as I know, Idaho doesn't even recognize that as an option. Just wanted to get your thoughts because it kind of set me down a rabbit hole. But I think that's the case. So it's not even an option. Right. Thanks. I like to listen to your show. You're doing great. Okay. Bye.
I believe she's right. There is not a way to argue insanity as a plea in terms of a standard. Idaho recognizes the insanity defense as a plea. In Idaho, the legal standard for the insanity defense is the McNaughton rule, which requires the defense to show that at the time of a crime, they suffered from a mental disease or defect that prevented them from understanding the nature and consequences of their actions or from knowing that their actions were wrong. So that's a tough one to fight.
Yeah.
If the defendant is successful in raising the insanity defense, they may be found not guilty by reason of insanity, which means that while they committed the crime, they are not held criminally responsible for it due to their mental state at the time. Instead of being sent to prison, they'd be committed to a mental health facility for treatment until they're deemed fit to be released back into the community. It's important to note, though, that the use of insanity defense is relatively rare and can be very difficult to prove, which would very likely be almost impossible to prove in this case, seeing as he was cognizant of being able to get into a car, drive around, connect point A to point B, had been working, he wasn't insane. So I don't think it's a very, very, very hard one to argue in Idaho, which is why it's basically said that it doesn't exist, because in many ways it doesn't.
Man, I imagine the community is just, this is all they talk about, don't you think?
I don't know. I mean, that's an interesting thought. Up there, I think they're sick to death of it. They probably want to move on and find some peace. And yeah, they're sick of reporters coming in and staring at that house and talking about it, because it was a tight-knit, peaceful, small community that had not seen a homicide in many, 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 many years. And to have all that blown up in your face and suddenly you're the center of this horrific crime, I don't know that. I don't know. If I was there, I probably wouldn't want to be talking about it, just because it's been done. I don't know. I feel bad for the residents there. And of course the families that are dealing with all this, because it puts such a stain on something that for the most part, they still do have a very peaceful, safe community. I think Koberger was very much an oddball, if in fact he's the person that got in there. But you know, these people are in society all over the place. We just don't know exactly where they are or when they're going to strike. Or when we do see the signs, there ain't shit that we can do about it till they do their thing.
You're listening to the Hidden Killers Podcast.
Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi.
And that's the scary thing. They can just kind of do their thing and, oh, now we got to do something, even though all the signs were there. I don't profess to know the answer to any of that. 888-554-5537, 888-5KILLER is the phone number. If you want to weigh in with your thoughts on any of the cases that we are following for you, we would love to hear it. You can follow me on Twitter at Tony B Pod. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.